Today's program has been brought to you by Underground Meats, an American producer of handcrafted salami and cured meats in Madison, Wisconsin. For more information, visit shop.undergroundfoodcollective.org or stop by their butcher shop in Madison, Wisconsin. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. We are taping at Roberta's Restaurant out in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. Besides for being a host, my daytime job is the beverage director of Del Anima Lartuzzi, Anfora, and La Picho restaurants in downtown Manhattan, and I have on the show today a good friend, but also someone who does the same job as I do, but for one of the restaurants that I love absolutely the most in all of New York City. I guess a colleague of mine, a friend, Pascaline Lepeltier from Rouge Tomate. Welcome, Pascaline.
Hello.
I'm so excited to have Pascaline here, but also so grateful because Pascaline got out of work at 1 a.m. And that's the tough thing about having wine sommeliers and beverage directors on this show and people who work in restaurants in general. If you didn't have last night off, you probably got out pretty late.
Yeah, like it's you're gonna have my very early morning voice today with us. Like, yeah, it's like finished quite late last night, so it's I think it's a curse and a blessing of wine people. You know, you just live a little bit another rhythm, but at the same time you discover and you leave the city in another way too. So, but I'm very blessed today to see Brooklyn in this very early light. It's pretty awesome. So thank you for having me, Joe.
Thank you so much for being on the show. So we have, like I said, Pascaline from Rouge Tomate. As you can probably tell, it's not just her early morning Brooklyn radio voice, but Pascaline is from France. More specifically, grew up in the Loire Valley in France. So I imagine as a kid, you were drinking Vouvray all the time and Sancerre always in
yeah,
the bottle.
I wish. It's not, you know, it's not really like that, I would say, in France, unless your parents are really into wine. And my mom didn't really drink anything, and my father was drinking Côte de Bourg and Côte de Blaye, and that's pretty much it. So even growing amongst vineyard, I had to do my personal education, and first went through, like, you know, Absolut and Baileys, like I think every young teenager, and then
they have Baileys in the Loire Valley in France.
They have Baileys in the Loire Valley in France, yes. And I discovered wine like little by little, more like around 16, 17, 18 by myself. And I think it's a lot of the wine as something popular amongst teenager or like young, like, you know, teenager, because we can drink pretty young in France. It's kind of it's a national habits, not to have to wait 21 to start to enjoy wine.
Can you stop showing off?
Stop pretty early. But the fact that wine, you know, is something that is pretty trendy amongst people in their 20s, a little bit earlier, I think is something extremely new. And even in France, like 15 years ago, and I know I'm not that old, but like 15 years ago, it was not really the case. You know, at 16, 17, you didn't drink wine. Like, you were drinking beer and booze. And so like when I really started to get a little bit into wine, I was really by myself. You know, my parents didn't really care. My friends were just wanting to have some Malibu and Coco Rum. So it was kind of a more personal experience.
So you grew up in the Loire, were not that interested in wine, and then something kind of clicked. What was it? You said, I've been surrounded by these great vines for such a long time. Now I'm very interested in it. How did that happen?
You know, I think it was a long, like, kind of a process. First comes with a taste. The taste education is something fundamental, you know, and it's not a given. You need to educate your palate, and same thing for wine. You know, you start to and you were right. I was drinking Coteau du Layon and Coteau de Lebance and sweet Vouvray as an introduction and bubbles. So you start with something sweet. And at that time, I was my path was totally different. I was meant to become a university teacher. You know, I was kind of the prodigy child, super gifted for philosophy. Can you believe that? And so, like everybody was seeing me already, like teaching and preaching philosophy at university. So I was doing something totally different. And one of the way for me to escape was to just run and be in the vineyard. So I started just like to enjoy spending times, not visiting in the vineyard. And I started little by little to enjoy more and more wine. And thanks to one of my philosophy teachers that was a crazy guy into wine, I started to, because I wanted, I was just like, it was more than a mentor for me. And the after theory type of class, he started to open bottle of Burgundy and bottle of champagne. So it was boom. Wow, something was happening at that very, very moment. And wine took a more and more important place in my life.
Was this a great conflict in your life for a while, that like, I've spent all this time on philosophy, I have this new love and passion for wine, what am I going to do?
No, it was more a solution. You know, like at 21, I was like finishing my graduation for philosophy, and I was like, I'm really 21, and I'm going to start to teach philosophy, you know, to people that were like in their 17. So it was a huge... I got a huge crisis. I was like, I just can't do that. It doesn't make any sense. You know, you can't teach something so incredibly complex when you barely didn't live anything yourself. You know, how do you want to speak about love and life and work and death and like everything you want to without having any experience of that? So I decided I was too young. I was way too young to teach or to rethink, or my thought would have been only, you know, delirium, intellectual construction. So the wine came as a solution. I was like, okay, what do I like to do? And oh, I like to be in the restaurant, because I was working in a restaurant to make money, you know, during the summer. I like to be in the restaurant. And what do I like in a restaurant? Well, I like wine. And boom. So wine came as a solution. So no conflict.
Oh, that's fantastic. Wine is solving the problems.
Solving a lot of problems.
So do you find that yourself, do you find that you are more attracted to wines by winemakers who approach it more as a philosophy? I mean, I can't tell you how much I love and respect your wine list, but do you find that the producers that you're attracted to and are the ones who are more thoughtful and think of it in a more, I don't want to say philosophical terms, but you'll probably correct me on that.
Like... wine took right away more than the meaning of an alcoholic beverage, you know. Right away, wine came up to me as something so much more cultural and sociological and, like, geological, everything. Like, wine came up something incredibly meaningful. And we were just, before the show, talking about, like, the 1937, you know, that really like changed my life. I drank this very old bottle of Yquem that I was very lucky to taste, and I was like, that day, not only the wine was incredible, not only I was able to share this wine with very, very dear people, of friends of mine, and we just had this moment all together, and that meant already a lot of thing about wine, but I was drinking something from 1937, like previous World War II, in a totally different time and area. And that day, yeah, I was like, wine is maybe the only thing that is able to do that, to connect me right now with my dearest friend around me, and to connect me with something that was years ago, and to give me this incredible pleasure right away. And so that, combined with the fact that I learned more technical fact with people working at a smaller scale, people working their vineyard, spending their morning and their nights working their vineyard, working, yes, a lot in an organic and biodynamic way. And I have a lot of reflection about how to grow plants and how to preserve the nature that we're working with. All that combined made me feel like there is one way I want to one way. There is one big way I want to enjoy wine is with and for these people that are trying to give and to create a beverage that is able to transmit a man, a place, a time, an history, and to make that simple and enjoyable by everybody.
Now, you're a big advocate for these organic and biodynamic wines. It's also something that I'm quite interested in. But what first got you interested in them? Is this from the beginning? You know, Loire Valley is really one of the hubs for organic wine in the world, where they have some of the greatest producers, but also a large concentration of producers who are making wine in that style.
Yeah, no, like right away, I the first time I pruned and the first time I did harvest were with these people. So right away, I really thought, I just thought it was the only way, you know, and then I discovered there was a bunch of other way, but the taste that I had and the just the growing of the plants. You know, my mom used to teach, she had a PhD in biology and horticulture, so she used to teach about plants. And so I remember visiting vineyard with her and seeing what was happening in organically worked growing area versus even conventional sustainable vineyard, and like it was day and night. You know, it was a no-brainer. You are like, okay, I don't want to drink anything coming from that vineyard. So let's try to enjoy and to understand why this vineyard is just more beautiful, peaceful, like, and just balanced. You could see that there is a whole balance between the whole environment. So it was a no-brainer right away, just because I was able to see them side by side and to drink the wine side by side.
Now, we can't go and visit every single wine that's on the list, especially when you have such an incredible and vast list the way that you guys have it at Rouge Tomat. How can you be sure that the wines are made in the manner that you want? Do you feel like we can trust our distributors to say that? Or do you really have to go through and know the producer themselves, meet them when they come in, ask them some tougher questions about how they're making their wine?
It's a great question. Of course, we can't travel everywhere. I'm sure we wish to do it.
I wish we
could do that, but we can't. Yeah, there is a question of trust. You know, trust your distributor. Yeah, of course, these people, you can't travel, they can. And we are extremely lucky in New York to have amazing people that are doing an incredible job in terms of sourcing and promoting and selling small growers. And yes, I start, after 4 years, I start to be able to, I trust some of them with no doubt. Yes, meeting the winemaker every time they are in town. Yes, this is, and you want to see the face behind the label. You want to be able not only to ask technical questions, but just like, to speak with a person, and you know that, you know, you meet somebody randomly and the first time and you have a feeling, you know, it's okay, I can trust, there is something good. And yes, after you can ask more specific question about how do you farm and what you do and what you do for your wine, but this is secondary, I would say. And then you need to trust your palate. After a while, you start like, how many wine do you taste? Do we taste a year? Mm-hmm. Thousands of wine, I would say. So yeah, at one point we start to have a little idea, and then you do research, and then yes, you plan a trip, because at the end, the only way I think to understand is really to be able to travel and to visit and take it on your personal time, and yeah, buy a ticket and spend a week. I know we can't do that on a daily basis, but this is the reason why I do this job.
Yeah, and I'd say that if you guys go into a restaurant, you should. And you have the opportunity to talk to a sommelier or beverage director, see if they have gone to any of the regions or met the people. Because I've personally found that sometimes I'll taste a wine and I've met the producer or read about the wine and I get really excited about it. And then I'm like, oh, I just hope I like this wine so much. And then when I taste it, it doesn't come together for me, even though I'm really hoping to like it. And then conversely, sometimes there are wines that I taste and they're great, and then I meet the producer and I'm like, oh,
yeah,
you're like that, huh?
Yeah, it's very strange. No, you know, like a good example was recently I was tasting the wine of Dirk Nieport for a while, and I was a little bit I think they were amazing, but not, they were great, sorry, but not amazing, great wine. And I knew a little bit Dirk Nipot's a huge character, it's a huge personality. And I was like, okay, but no, I'm not, I don't really think I'll get the wine. And then I went to Portugal, and I went to the Douro, and I visited the vineyard, and we spent the whole day, and I spent part of the late night harvest, like in September. And I tried the wine on barrel with age, and I was like, wow, there is something going on. Like, really to see and change my mind. And now I have the dry red Charm Dirk Nipot on the list. Yeah, because now sometimes you just don't get it right away. Yeah, we are learning. I am learning. Mm-hmm. I'm only like 7 years in this business. You know, I'm a young kid in this wine world. So I'm learning.
All right, I'm going to ask you a little bit more about your learning and education process when we come back. But first, we're going to take just a short break. And this is In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
You're listening to Lackadaisical on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Underground Meats is an American producer of handcrafted salami and cured meats in Madison, Wisconsin. They use small farms from southwest Wisconsin to source their meat. The animals are raised on pasture for their entire lives by farmers who care about animal welfare. While Underground Meats uses European traditions, they also use ingredients from the upper Midwest to try to create new types of salamis, experimenting with both ingredients and techniques. The salamis are made using heritage breeds, mostly red wattles, tamworths, berkshires, and mule foots. Try their award-winning cured pork shoulder and goat salami. To learn more and purchase products, visit shop.undergroundfoodcollective.org or stop by their butcher shop in Madison, Wisconsin.
And we're back on In the Drink here on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Joe Campanelli, and I'm here with Pascaline Lepeltier, the beverage director of Rouge Tomat. If it didn't come across from the first half, I'm just such a fan of Pascaline and the wine list and beverage program that she's put together over at Rouge Tomat. I think it's one of the most interesting and exciting wine lists in the city, and I think that daring in some ways to put a list together like that in the location that you're located on the first parts of the Upper East Side.
Yeah, first, thanks for the compliment. it's a lot. I don't know, like, you know, we just try to do our best over there. So, you know, things like didn't happen right away. Huh? Like what you see now is not what we had 3.5 years ago. You know, the location, the guests, I can see that. At the beginning, I was more like, well, I am in this very, very specific neighborhood, and they never heard about natural wine, and none of the rep from Dresdner never went at that level of the city, you know. It was like a non-natural wine zone. And instead of, like, thinking, well, I need to just give them what they want, because we are a business and we need these guests and we need to make money, little by little, I realized that, you know, they just want good wine. They just want good wine. And my job is to find good wine. And my job is to find good wine at a good price. And to find a good wine at a good price to make this business work. And it happens, I think, a lot of good wines are organic and biodynamic and natural wine. So it just took a little bit of time. It took a lot of time on the floor. And it still takes me a lot of time on the floor. And I love that, to really understand what the guests want. And you realize that the guests are much more open-minded that you can't think they are. There is no caricature. You know, you can't say, okay, it's because I'm on the Upper East Side that they're going to drink Jordan over all the day. No. No, it's not the case. So, it took... I started to put little by little this type of wine. And the first time I remember I put a Chardonnay by the glass from California, organic. That was not a big name, but I thought it was very, very well balanced. And I realized that he was selling like crazy. I was scared for nothing. I was scared for nothing. So so now it's very awesome. We have such a diverse clientele. We are a big place. So every table is different at night when we do 200 covers. Where it's every table is different, and I hope we start to become a destination for the food and the wine. We are like the food is also so specific, you know. The fact we are working with this nutritionist and we are a farm-to-table restaurant and a grain restaurant at the same time in this neighborhood is something unique. So you don't come to Rouge Tomate anymore to have Belgian food or fries. Or you come because there is something going on and you are curious and so you are open-minded. And if you're open-minded for food...
You're right. The food is so special. It's so fresh and so fresh and so clean. But yeah. I've really feasted and overeaten multiple times Rouge Tomate, but have not felt sick in any way. You know, that kind of when you've eaten too much, but it's not been good for you kind of food, eating too much.
Yeah, you know, it's the idea. Like the idea is like you can have an healthy, nutritional, balanced food with a level of gastronomy that is pretty high. Like... without being a diet type of hospital clinical type of dishes, you know. So you can indulge yourself over there because we, the nutritionists or chef, are working behind the scene to put together these dishes where there is no bad nutrients, no empty nutrients. So, but you don't know it. You know, it's like my work with the wine. I want you to come. I want you to have a wine with very, very low additives, and I don't want you to be hangover the day after or to feel like you are burning because the wine has been acidified and, like, obviously it doesn't work very well with your stomach. So it's the same thing with the wine or the same thing with a cocktail. And so we do all this job, and we just want you to come and to have a blast. We don't want you to come to think, oh, my God, this is green and it's organic and this is natural. You come, we take care of you, and there is something happening.
Yeah, you don't once you enter... It doesn't. You forget that it's you know actually very healthy food. It just feels like a fine dining restaurant that happens to have an amazing wine list and is a fun and comfortable place to. That's the other thing. It's kind of more fun and comfortable than most Upper East Side fine dining restaurants. So I'm really a fan. So on top of running this huge beverage program and working with the nutritionist there to find wines that are appropriate for the food and me dragging you out to Brooklyn at the crazy hours of the morning. You're also studying for your Master Sommelier exam.
Yeah. I hope to be next year on, I hope to be able to sit next year for the Master Diploma.
So what is your week like of studying and how do you have time to do this?
It's tough. Like I just took a break. I was in France for a competition like 3 weeks ago. So I decided to do a month of break and just to give myself a bit of time. Like when you are in this type of program, it's almost day and night, you know. You're at work, you are thinking about the diploma, you are thinking, you're approaching a table, you're thinking how you have to end all your service for that. Every time you open a bottle of wine, you are thinking, okay, I'm opening right now. This bottle of Chambolle Musigny, Premier Cru, Les Feux Slots. Where is Les Feux Slots? My God, who is doing Les Feux Slots? What are the best vintage for this brandy over the last 20 years? And then it's as soon as you have a break, it's flash card and things like that. But, you know, I just want to say about all this exam and... I know that people are for or against. It's like, don't understand. It's a very, like, once you get them, you leave the floor, blah, blah, blah. I think they're, like, for me, I see the master as an amazing opportunity to give me the chance to study things I would have never studied otherwise because I would have been, like, driven by tasting a lot of Shiraz from Australia because it's not what I really like. And I just think, like, right now people sometimes tend to forget about keeping a curiosity for everything. It's very easy just to go in natural wine, you know, and say, this is only natural wine, and you forget the rest. But I really believe you understand only why there is great natural wine if you get the rest. I love Côte Rôtie because I also am able to test Syrah from the rest of the world, and I'm discovering pretty good thing. And so the MS is like that. And the MS is, I think it's the right way to take it is to understand it's going to be a tool to make you better at your job tomorrow. It's not when you're going to have the pin or the day you become, I don't know, best sommelier of anything. Okay, you, these days are awesome in your life. But the day after, you are back on your daily job and you are back with your staff and you are just somebody with a little bit more knowledge and experience that you understood, that you make your own. Mastering is about making something your own for me. And it takes time. It takes a lot of time. So, yes, you have all this theory that you need to know by heart, but it doesn't make any sense if you are not able to give it back to somebody because you understood it. And this is where like I am in this process right now.
So as soon as you get the MS, you're not leaving the floor and starting Pascaline's Staten Island Vineyard?
No, not yet. One day, yes, I will have to public. I will have a vineyard and I will make Chenin Blanc. But not yet. Not yet. I have way too much. I'm such a lucky girl to work here in New York, to meet you guys. Like, being in New York as a French sommelier coming from my country, whereas we are still super narrow-minded, is just incredible. This city for wine is incredible. The wine community is amazing. There is just pure emulation amongst us just to not only to become better professional, but to have the luck to make people discover more and more wine. This is, New York is just incredible for that.
And have you seen the movie yet? There's a movie that I'm like dying to see about the whole sommelier competition.
No, I think I will see it after. The day I pass. Otherwise,
it's intense. I've seen clips, and I know quite a few people who are in the program. It's just a high level of tense, and you spend so much time working on it. That I know that people put a lot of stress and pressure on themselves to, they feel they have to pass it.
You know, at the end, we do that for pleasure. Hey.
Yeah.
You love wine, I love wine. It's not the end of the world. Huh? You are not MS. The world is not going to stop. I'm not MS, so it's going to take me 15 years. Okay, a lot of money, a lot of weekend. Maybe I'm not ready. That's it. It's not the end of the world. I think if you forget the notion of pleasure, You can't work. You can't work in restaurants. You can't become an MS. You can't do that because it's just so hard. You know, it's just so many hours, so many things to know.
That's such a good point. I mean, I think that's what drives a lot of people to go into the MS program and to do other certifications. Is that it's a profession that we choose because it's one that's based on passion and it's based on. Sometimes life encompassing, but it's because in our free time, what we want to do is learn more and get better and be surrounded by wine and people who are interested in the subject. And it's not like most other professions where when you leave work, you are checked out and you leave work.
Yeah, no, I think it would be very boring, you know, I wouldn't be able to do that. You know, I think right now to leave and to do the job that you are passionate about is still very rare, and so it's a blessing every day. It's not easy, but it's a blessing, as you said, to be able to do what you want.
During your studies and your wine tastings, has there been anything that you were completely surprised about, something that you're like, oh, I am not looking forward to this day when we're going to taste all of the Malbecs or whatever it was, and then you're like, oh, that was surprising. I actually like those way more than I thought I would. Or do you try to keep it purely educational and try to take the pleasure and the like factor out of it?
No, I can't really, you know. Like right now, I'm part of this Australian program because I don't know very well Australia, and I have these ideas, these prejudices about Australia, and in fact, I'm pretty impressed by some wine, you know, like I would have just liked to be known, this is just like mass product wine, overripe and totally manipulated. And now there is some amazing, great wine. So, and makes me happy, you know, I like to be wrong. I like to be wrong because it makes me think that I have so much more to learn and to discover. It would be so boring to be right now. Like, yes. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, because then your learning is over with.
Yeah, learning is over. Right. So no, it's like the amazement needs to be here every day. Otherwise, it doesn't. It's not very funny.
Yes, and if any of you want to be amazed, go to Rouge Tomate and drink wine with Pascaline. Thank you so much for coming on In the Drink. I really appreciate it, and I'll definitely be coming to visit you soon.
Yeah, and I hope, and you will see me again at your place, because like, I'm not sure everybody tells you, but I'm a huge fan of you. And
too nice. All right. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in every Wednesday at 10 o'clock for In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.